This is the Pacifica National Board meeting of Saturday, January 28th, 2012, convening at 9:27 a.m. Pacific, 12:27 p.m. Eastern. Summer Reese Chair, Bill Crozier Vice Chair, Afia Longaza Secretary. We're now calling the meeting to order. Madam Secretary, if you'd call the roll, please. Thank you.
Ken Aaron.
Here.
Ivan Alsame.
Here.
Teresa Allen.
Present.
Nia Beriaco.
Present.
Wesley Bethune.
Here.
Carolyn Verdon.
Present.
Lydia Brazon.
Here.
Bill Crozier.
Here.
Kathy Davis.
Here.
Revelyn Gohl.
Present.
Navigation.
Present.
Thank you.
Navigation.
Heather Gray.
Here.
Campbell Johnson.
Here.
Allie Lexa.
Present.
Ifia Wangaza. Present. Laura Priebus.
Here.
Summer Reese.
Present.
Marcel Reed.
Here.
George Ryder.
Here.
Tracy Rosenberg.
Here.
Dan Siegel.
Here.
Alex Steinberg.
Present.
Andrea Turner.
Present.
Arlene Engelhardt.
Present.
Laverne Williams. Here. Andy Gall.
Here.
John Gary.
Here.
We have quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Thank you. Everyone, I'd like to introduce Andy Gold, who's down there at the end of the conference table, our new legal counsel of a few months. And Andy is going to start our day with a, you've all been handed a handout called Rules of the Road, a brief primer on nonprofit board responsibilities and fiduciary duties. And so, and he'll answer questions. So I will give the floor to Andy, and we'll go from there, okay? Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Does this work?
Yes, it does.
You have to nearly swallow it to make it work. First, hello to everybody. I've met most, if not all of you, by telephone, but not in person. So this is an opportunity for me to get to know you, and likewise, and vice versa. Summer asked me to prepare something on board duties and responsibilities. As just kind of a general primer, I should let you know that this is not an area of my expertise, and I'm not here to do a long-winded presentation or a day of workshops, but I did think it was useful to try to do some kind of a short presentation and to give you some materials that you should feel free to look at later. I put together a package that I believe has been handed out, and that it's just called Rules of the Road. And it consists basically of two things. The first is a chapter from something called A Guide to the Law of Charities in the United States. The chapter is called How Charities Govern Themselves. Some of it you may not find that useful, but there is some material in there specific to board responsibilities. Also, just as a sidelight, I wanted to point out that the The author of that is the principal author is Betsy Buchalter Adler of the firm of Adler Colvin, probably the best known lawyer in the state on nonprofit law. And you all might like to know that when we have legal issues that deal particularly with nonprofit law, that's Betsy is our attorney. So we're getting it from the source, and she's been terrific. Frankly, it's a great resource for me, and I think also for the foundation. The second piece of material that I included is something I found from the Center for Nonprofit Management, which I think is based in L.A. Are they not? And it's an FAQ section, but I thought it was when I was doing some research, I thought it was very useful. It's on nonprofit boards, frequently asked questions about nonprofit boards, and there are some particular sections in there that I really think bear some closer review. There's certainly plenty of other reading material out there. You can go on Google. Also, the Betsy's firm's website, adlercolvin.com, has links to some very good kind of general reading on board duties and responsibilities and kind of overall legal issues applicable to nonprofits. There's one, she's got one link on there to something called What Every Nonprofit Board Member Should Know. It was 55 pages, so I didn't want to print it out and give it to everybody, but if you want to do a little reading at home, that would be a good one to look at. In my review, I generally divide the board role into two areas. One is legal duties and responsibilities. That's one area. The other area is more operational, organizational responsibilities. So as to legal duties, under California law, pretty much under the law of any state, there's essentially two duties that everybody on the board has. One is a duty of care, and one is a duty of loyalty. Under the duty of care, directors must act in good faith, and I'm taking this right from the Bible here, act in good faith in what they believe to be the best interests of the organization, and act with such care as an ordinarily prudent person would use in similar circumstances. Not the clearest concepts, but, sort of guidelines. To satisfy these duties, directors are generally expected to attend meetings of the board and any committees they serve on, and exercise their independent judgment, and I think this is important, which means their judgment must be a personally informed one and not solely reliant on or dominated by the opinion of other directors or officers. In other words, everybody's supposed to think for themselves, which I suspect most people here are inclined to do. Directors can rely on information reports provided by officers or employees whom the director believes are reliable and competent in the manner presented. They can rely on professionals or others retained by the organization as to matters the director believes are within that person's area of expertise or competence. Or they can rely on a committee of the board as to matters within its jurisdiction if the director reasonably believes the committee bears confidence, merits confidence. So that's sort of the general guideline for duty of care. Under the duty of loyalty, directors owe an undivided allegiance to the organization's interest, which means they must not use their positions to further their own interests or those of another person or entity unconnected with the organization. The duty of loyalty also requires that directors act to further the best interests of the organization as a whole and not merely for the benefit of a particular constituency. Duty of loyalty is regarded as encompassing within it three sort of sub-areas. Conflicts of interest between directors in the interest of the organization, corporate opportunities that become available to the organization, and confidentiality of non-public information. A conflict of interest arises when a director has a direct or indirect interest in a transaction involving the organization. For example, if Pacific enters into a contract with an entity in which a director has a financial or ownership interest, that would be a conflict of interest. It's permissible to do for a conflict to exist if it is disclosed to the board by the board member and the transaction is still approved by the board. This is more of a corporate concept, but it also applies to nonprofits, which is that directors are prohibited from usurping opportunities and competing with the organization. You see this more in the profit world than the nonprofit, but it equally applies here. The doctrine involves any situation where a director is presented with an opportunity which the director should know would be of interest to the organization. The director must disclose that opportunity to the board. If the board declines the opportunity, the director is free to act on it. For example, a director learns of an opportunity to acquire a radio station in another city, something that's within, you know, Pacifica's general realm of business. The director must present that opportunity to Pacifica before he or she can pursue that opportunity on their own or with another group. The duty of confidentiality. Directors are under a duty to treat as confidential the organization's internal activities and communications unless there has already been general public disclosure or the information is a matter of public record or knowledge. This is a duty that speaks clearly to me as counsel. You know, just for today's purposes, I've distributed, I think they've already been passed out, or if not, they will be, confidential materials on pending and threatened litigations against Pacifica. And we will be discussing cases where directors, you know, almost certainly will know parties to the cases. You know, they will know people who have sued Pacifica. They're people who have been former employees. You all have a duty not to disclose those materials or the substance of any of our communications concerning those cases to any of the outside parties. And I do want to emphasize that. It's in order for me to provide the kind of counsel that I think I'm expected to provide to the group, I need to feel confident that the things I say are not going to leave the room of this organization or of this board. Now, with respect to organizational and operational responsibilities, the real issue is what are the respective roles and duties of the board and what are the roles and duties of the executive director and management? At the broadest level, there's a general maxim, which is that boards make policy, management implements the policy. Again, not the most useful in terms of the practical level, but that's kind of the general maxim. The Center for Nonprofit Management materials that I circulated has this to say in response to the question, what are the respective roles of the boards of directors and management? You know, different organizations can vary from these things, but these are kind of this is kind of the generally accepted separation between those responsibilities. So the board member responsibilities. The board is responsible for governance and policy setting. This is a level of board oversight that focuses on mission, direction, priorities, and the evaluation of the organization's programs. Other specific duties generally include financial oversight through the review of financial statements and setting of budgets, fundraising, and its own internal operations for the board, nominations, election of directors, officers, that sort of thing. A critical role of the board is to hire, set the compensation for, evaluate, and fire, if necessary, executive director, and depending on your contractual relations, other staff. Board members should not be involved in daily management. In most cases, they will not be close enough, and again, I'm just telling you the way they say it in the books. In most cases, the board members will not be close enough to the situation to have an appropriate approach, and this involvement can undermine the ability of the executive director to run the organization. The center has generally found that when board members intervene in ongoing management, there is not sufficient attention being paid to those duties which are the responsibility of the board of directors. And then with respect to executive director responsibilities, the executive director is ordinarily responsible for day-to-day management of the organization and the implementation of the policies of the board of directors. These responsibilities include making policies operational through the development of procedures and rules, hiring and firing of staff, and specific allocation of resources within the guidelines set by the board. While the executive director should have input into broad-level policy, this is primarily the domain of the board of directors. So at a practical level, the executive director runs the organization subject to the guidance and oversight of the board. The executive director doesn't make policy, and the board shouldn't micromanage the executive director or staff. So that's my, you know, sort of quick nickel version overview of general principles of board responsibilities and duties and division of labor between board and executive director.
I see hands going up, Dan.
Okay. Andy, I've got a question for you. It's not a trick question, but I think it is a difficult question, and perhaps something that this board should discuss, and maybe if we reached agreement on it, we would get along better and have fewer disputes and even less litigation. And the question is this. Does our fiduciary duty include the duty to refrain from using Pacifica's resources to carry on political disputes within the organization? I mean, as you know, we have been a fairly factionalized board for several years, and we are now in a mode, or have been in a mode, where people are have passed resolutions to disqualify other board members, and that's resulted in litigation and so on. And if that were determined to be done not for pure motives, but to advance the interests of one or another political faction, could you see that as a breach of fiduciary duty?
I think the short answer is yeah, I think I could. You know, first, just as a prelude, it's something I said, I think, in my initial interview. It pained me from the outside, and it pains me more from the inside to see the extent to which Pacifica's sometimes sparse resources are devoted to litigation, much of which is internal litigation. I know that there are strong-minded, strong-willed people that have passionate interests, and sometimes that spills over into litigation. And sometimes they can't be helped. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear that the duty of loyalty is to the organization, and that the duty of loyalty and the duty of care both speak to the idea that that you're supposed to value the organization above any particular constituent element within the organization. I mean, it's always going to be we're lawyers, and it's always a case-by-case analysis, and it's going to be hard to differentiate when an action by a board member against Pacifica may actually be in the best interest of Pacifica and when it is not. So maybe there's not a black and white answer, but I think that, you know, but certainly it's something one has to look at every time, is whether or not the person's acting on behalf of a constituency, or truly on behalf of the, you know, the duty is to the corporate, is to the organization, not to the faction.
Ken, and then Alex.
Two questions. They're kind of heavy. One, in terms of loyalty and acting for the best interest of the body that you're the board of, the board, you know, in this case our foundation, would it be considered a violation of that requirement to try to create a dissolution of the foundation, to break it apart? That's the first question. Because, you know, whether or not you agree with the foundation, if you want to break it apart, you shouldn't be on the board because it violates that loyalty requirement. The second question is, in terms of confidentiality that you were referring to earlier, what if one of the board members is involved in a suit with the board? Would they have to recuse themselves when getting advice from the counsel for the board?
I'll take the second one first, and then I might ask you to restate the first one. You know, I don't know exactly where to draw the line, because obviously this is something that's going to come up today. We have people who are parties to a litigation that we're going to be discussing. I mean, you know, it's titled Bernstein versus Pacifica, but it's Dan and a couple of others are parties to it. You know, there's a part of that discussion that, frankly, I would be happy to have as an open board. There are parts of that discussion that I don't think are confidential. There are parts of that discussion that I might actually be interested in hearing some of Dan's views, because they're not things that necessarily involve, you know, a strategy or decision making in terms of what the organization elects to do in the litigation. There does come a point, though, at which you know, a decision is going to be made, and that decision may involve some confidential communication about what are going to be litigation strategies from the foundation's point of view. And at that point, I think that anybody who's a participant in the litigation cannot be, I mean, that is having, you know, a microphone or a recording device in the conference room of your opposing counsel. You know, you can't do that. So there will come, you know, if and when, I assume we're going to talk about that case, because there's a, you know, we're at a certain point in that case, and there's some issues about whether or not to take an appeal. And my feeling is that, you know, I don't mind initial participation, but there's going to be a place in there where we say, all right, we got to make a decision. Here are the factors. Here are the things. And at that point, I think it's appropriate. You know, I would think it's appropriate for Dan and any of the other parties to recuse themselves. And if not, I think we would ask them to leave the room.
Okay, thank you. The first part of the question, not to waste a lot of time with rhetoric and euphemisms. If a board member feels that it's in the best interest of the station that he's representing, it's in their best interest to separate from the foundation, okay? It's not the best interest of the foundation, but the best interest of a subset, as you just read earlier, shouldn't that board member resign from the foundation because he's not acting in the best interest of the foundation, but of some subset?
I think so. I think that's a conflict. That's a conflict of interest.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Alex, you're next.
I guess I'm going to ask you another question of this type, but not about this specific case. Would you consider it a violation of fiduciary responsibility for a faction or a group at one of our stations to organize a recall campaign based on, let's say, very flimsy charges that is costing the foundation somewhere, I don't know what the figure is, somewhere between $25,000 and $50,000 in order to mail out the ballots and hire a supervisor the way our bylaws mandate that it be done. And that, and if the purpose of the recall campaign is essentially factionally and politically motivated, is that a violation of fiduciary responsibility or not?
Honestly, I would be happy to not give a legal opinion on that. Because it's a loaded question. Yeah. I mean, I think you know it's a loaded question.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a theoretical sense, that could certainly be regarded as a breach of fiduciary duty. But at the same time, you know, you have characterized the proceedings and the motivations in a certain way that makes it a breach of fiduciary duty.
But I gave you a hypothesis.
Answer,
well, I know, but it's a hypothetical that, you know, I've been around. I'm new to the organization, but I'm not that new. and I do recognize that you know that there is embedded in that a point of view that makes it impossible to answer. Yes, the answer is yes, as you characterized it. If something like that had no motives other than political and factional motives, then that's inconsistent with their duty. I'm sure the people on another side would argue that their motivations were in the best interest of the foundation and were not solely political.
And folks, if I may, not to unduly give guidance in this situation, if it's something which bears specifically on something which we will be discussing in executive session, you will have 2 hours with Mr. Gold only in the morning session. We'll be seeing him again later today as well, but where you can ask more in-depth on particular matters. So. Oh, yeah, we're definitely on open session. And these are fine. I mean, hypothetical questions are fine. I'm just saying this is a more general duty situation rather than necessarily specific answers on things which we will be entertaining. I saw a hand over there. Was it Carolyn or was it Teresa? Carolyn, was it you?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Is this working?
Yeah.
Thank you. This is a question that has come up and will come up again because we're going into Pacifica elections. People at various stations, not candidates, supporters of candidates, board members, not board members, but what board members, I think is the thrust of my question, put up information on websites regarding the elections for Pacifica. A lot of those statements on websites are either, if I may use a euphemism, lies, or misrepresentations of the truth, or stretchers, factually incorrect and prejudicial and personally attacking other candidates or other factions. Where does the line get drawn and how do we draw that line? Should board members, national or even local, be allowed to do that, to continue to post things on lists which are demonstrably untrue, which have been factually refuted, so it's not that they're ignorant, but it's quite deliberate strategy. It's a campaign strategy. It's a very difficult thing to know where to stop and where to draw the line on that. How do we address that?
And I'm not sure that you can tell board members that they cannot participate in that kind of electioneering.
That kind lies.
Well, no. When I say that kind, I just mean the process of raising issues, having recall campaigns, the sort of what goes on behind the politics of any kind of dispute like that. With respect to whether or not, if one thinks that there are lies, there are legal remedies. I mean, those legal remedies belong to the individual that's being impugned. I've done a lot of First Amendment work, and the First Amendment's a very broad concept. There's a long way between slanted reporting and electioneering and what is actually legally actionable. I've looked at some of the materials that have been circulated in this, and we watch national campaigns. I'm sure we all watch national campaigns. And, Roe v. in politics are not just practiced at the national level. They're practiced at many levels. And it's often very hard to pinpoint something. I will tell you, smart campaigning can say a lot of things that are very questionable and not be legally actionable. And it takes a lot to turn something to the place where it actually is subject to legal action.
Okay, if I may, a correction perhaps. I'm not talking about legally actionable, but what recourse do other board members have against their colleagues who are, in fact, impugning perhaps a third set of people or the foundation and really making it bad? This is a problem.
No, we can look at it two ways. I mean, one is it a violation of the breach of – is it a breach of the duty of loyalty to the organization? And obviously, if it appears that, I don't know what the remedies are for this. There's no disciplinary procedure within here. But if it appears that people are acting contrary to the duty of loyalty, maybe there is some kind of censorship. Yeah, I don't know. There could be.
That's it.
I think so.
Okay, thank you.
There was another part of that, too, which is that, there's a concept in First Amendment law or a response that often when people say this speech is damaging, the response often is, you can't stop speech. What you can do is speak back. Mm-hmm. And that often the answer in First Amendment cases is not to chill speech, but to have more speech. And, and in situations like that, if it's an open forum for discussion, it's often a better, even strategically better, that rather than trying to, chill the speech of another, is to open it up and have further debate.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Other members? Campbell?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Mr. Gold, good morning and welcome. I would first like to inquire about a statement that you had made that you have been looking at some of the materials that have been circulated regarding these hypotheticals, I suppose we could say, that had been mentioned. Could you tell us more about what you are looking at and put the how that relates to an assignment of the by Pacifica, by the foundation?
There are some websites. Save KPFA has a website. I've looked at it. It's out there in the public. It wasn't by assignment for me to look at it.
So this isn't a billable situation then.
I bill all the time I spend on the internet. What do you think? No, I'm just kidding. I'm aware of these proceedings. It is stuff that's, particularly I live in the Bay Area, so it's maybe a little more in the frontal lobe for those of us who are in the Bay Area. But I've looked at some of the stuff online.
Thank you. I'm going to go to people who have not yet asked a question, so if you want a second round, I will get back to you. I have Teresa next.
This is supposed to be our orientation, and yesterday...
I'm oriented.
Yesterday we... I don't know if you...
I'm just getting started.
I don't know if everybody introduced themselves, but yesterday we went around and we asked what was our biggest joy in volunteering for Pacifica. So I don't know whether we're going to get to the other questions during this orientation, which is coming to a close. So I'm going to ask you, maybe, what are your two biggest hopes from what you've seen this year? What are your two biggest hopes for progress in Pacifica this year, maybe from your perspective? Because that would be, I hope, what is the question for each of us to be asking ourselves today.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously I have a different relationship to Pacifica. And you know, honestly, I go back to some of the things I said in my interview. I mean, one thing I hope is to, if possible, to reduce the temperature in the room. I don't know if that's even within my charge or within my skills, but I'd love to see an organization that spent less time and energy fighting amongst itselves and took more of that energy and more of that resource and committed it to the mission for which Pacifica is devoted. That's my number two. And number two, if possible, would be to reduce your legal fees.
Mm-hmm. Here, here.
I mean, I gotta say, I can't. I got, you know, I'm not sure how much control I have over that, and I'm being paid, I hope. But you pass the hat. Yeah, thanks. I got breakfast this morning. And I think my hotel room is paid for. But no, seriously. I mean, I do. That is something I would love to be able to do. I mean, I only have. You know, I'm not sure how much control I have over that. I mean, the only control I really have is when situations are presented to me as sort of the initial screening, you know, legal brain before it comes to the board, you know, is to try to find ways to deal with problems and try to keep some things from escalating to the level of dispute and cost.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ivan?
When Pacifica gets sued, it's the corporation that gets sued. Is there a way that individuals on the board can be held accountable? Whereas I think that it's very easy for us to somehow, I guess, factions incite lawsuits, etc. But is there any way that individuals can be held accountable if somehow their actions influence certain lawsuits? That probably will somehow reduce some of the legal actions.
Yeah, that's a big question. And there are actually some materials on board exposure, board indemnity, board liability that I didn't do here because I just wanted to kind of get the broad duties. It's conceivable that individuals on a board can be sued. I mean, that certainly happens in the world. It happens when a board takes actions that harm. Sometimes the organization gets sued, and then sometimes individual members can get sued. It's happened in some of the Pacifica litigations that individuals at stations, program directors or managers or whatever, have been sued for their actions. With respect to a board, and I don't know the board's insurance situation, but most boards carry a form of director and officer liability insurance.
Yes.
I assume, but I haven't been privy to that.
Assume nothing, but we do.
But you do. Okay. So for the most part, you know, actions, if as a board you take an action on behalf of the board that's consistent with what the board is supposed to be doing and you get sued, then you should be indemnified and defended by the board. If, on the other hand, you take an action that's outside the parameters of what the board is supposed to be doing, then you have potentially individual exposure. But as long as you're acting within the board, doing the things that the board is tasked to do, if the board gets sued, you're defended under the insurance policy.
Thank you. Lydia?
On that question of being indemnified, if I may ask whoever does have our policy, I assume it might be Arlene, if that could be sent to the board so we can make sure that it's current. I know we had issues back in the day after the suits in the early 2000s.
It has been distributed and earlier last year, but it can be distributed again
thank
for the current
you.
Term.
And it was renewed on October 1st.
Yeah.
Which is the renewal date every year on that policy.
Okay. Management will send it out to the current board for this year, for this term. Andrea? Was that it, Lydia? Were you done there? Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Andrea.
Can there be a separation? Like, let's say we vote on a policy as a board, and there are the majority wins on that. Can there be a minority separation from being indemnified? I mean, it's good. Like, if you didn't vote for it, can you separate out from the lawsuit or something?
Well, it's very hypothetical because it would depend a lot on what the particulars are. But for the most part, I mean, the policy indemnifies the board. So that if there's an action, no matter what your voting position was, if you get named in a lawsuit, you're going to be indemnified by the board. Does that answer? I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
because a board vote, I mean, if it's something that is authorized by the board, even if it's 22-2, you know, it is a board action. And the action is, you know, is done on behalf, you know, Pacifica by board authorization. Then if there's a lawsuit out of that, everybody's going to be indemnified.
And there's no way to separate out. I think there must be.
You know what?
Yeah, because
I don't know.
If we don't go along with it, it should be acknowledged in the suit. That's definitely.
Okay, all the hands I have are second rounders at this point. Is there anyone else who has not yet asked Mr. Gold a question? Ali will go next. I have four people for second round, so hold on, please.
Hi. Yesterday, one of the listeners, I think her name was Serene, made a comment about asking obvious questions. So, because there might be other people seeing these, so I hope you'll be patient with me. These are some very, very basic questions. I find this orientation extremely helpful and informative. Is this something that the local boards should... I assume this applies to the local boards as well?
You know, are the local boards separate legal entities?
No, they function as committees of the national board from a legal perspective. They have no independent authority or liability.
I still think it's...
So what I'm specifically referring to is the duties of the directors. I think that I like what I'm seeing here. Is this something that would be applicable to local boards?
Well, I'll let Mr. Gold answer, but in terms of functionality within the organization, this is the only board of Pacifica. All of the local boards do function as committees, and I don't believe errors and omissions insurance, they're not covered by that in the same way, but I see lots of hands. So Mr. Gold, he has another question, and if you have further...
Well, I think on that one...
Structurally, that's how it functions.
Yeah, no, I think Summer's right. It's not a board.
Yeah, just... okay.
No, I think structurally she's right. I mean, this is a board, so this, you know, the rules that apply to a nonprofit board apply to this group. It depends on how the local station boards are constituted, whether or not all that applies.
Well, I think...
Could I throw something in on that?
Go ahead, Dan.
It's correct that the local station boards are committees of this board, but they also have authority. For example, they make decisions about local staff, right? So in my opinion, that those are decisions that do implicate fiduciary duties.
Because they would trail up to this board, ultimately.
Well, some of them are not even subject to the decision or approval of this board. In other words, they make a decision about the local program manager, and that, and they also make recommendations to the GM on local station managers. And
so they can
decisions
do their own,
about budgets.
They can do some of their own hiring and firing and budgetary.
Subject to some level of review.
Foundation approval.
Then there is some review.
If I may, Mr. Gold, there's certain specific tasks, as Dan said, which are delegated to the local boards without further review by the national board, specifically review of the general manager and program director and or hiring committees to make recommendations at the local level. Approval of the local budgets, but the budgets then go up to the national level. That is not strictly a local decision. But the issue with hiring at the local level, those are, they do execute those duties independently. But this has come up before under discussion because people sometimes wonder if they are covered as local board members the way we are being, you know, functionally as a committee member, are they covered as well if they're not on the national board? So it may be something you might gonna get back to us if we don't have a specific answer
to that. And it might be something that...
And Arlene wants to add.
The policy might say something about that as well.
Although those duties do then get also, I mean, those get passed on. In other words, the review of the program director gets referred to the general manager, and it's a joint responsibility. The review of the general managers gets referred to the executive director, and it's a joint responsibility. So, and with the hiring, it's the same process. It's a the local board comes up with a list, and the final decision is made by, in the case of the program director, the general manager. In the case of the general manager, by me.
Let me let Ali finish this time. And
Summer, my question before was directed to Arlene, so I should be in the...
Yeah, no, I have you on question. Second rounds. I have four people.
I know, but my question was not... I haven't had any questions to Mr. Gold yet. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, well, let me let Ali finish, please.
So getting back to this... specifically this discussion about liability and lawsuits and things like that, would it be appropriate to give this kind of an orientation to our local boards? I think it's important for them to know about these kind of things that put the foundation at risk. What's your opinion on that?
My opinion is I think it would be a great idea. I mean, I think anybody that's serving on, whether they're on the national board, I mean, the local board still must, you know, as I hear, has some independent duties and responsibilities. And sure, the local board people should all have an understanding of what they're expected to do and to the extent they may have exposure, what their exposure could be.
Thank you.
This is actually a question, but related. There's also the issue of information that's presented to the local board. They, in order to function within the station, they need certain information, but some of that information may be confidential. And so the confidentiality issues become a very serious aspect of that information sharing.
Okay, I'll let Lydia go next, and then I'm going to take my second rounders.
Yes, I think this is kind of what, piggybacking on to what Andrea said, was hypothetically, of course, let's say there's a court injunction, and the majority on the board votes to act in contempt of court and violate that, and votes in a majority vote. What recourse does the minority on the vote on the board have? Because obviously this would be an executive session. How do you distance yourself from something that you know is in contempt of court, even though they may have gotten advice to the contrary, or for whatever reason, that's how they perceive the action?
Hypotheticals, sir. I thought we left those behind in law school, but I guess not. You know, it's in that situation, the individuals are not going to be found in contempt of court. It's the organization, it's the board, which made a decision that put the foundation into contempt of court. The contempt would be against the foundation, not the individuals. I mean, I think if you get into a situation like that where, you know, you're one of a very small number of people, and you feel like the board is running away in a direction that's going to bring that kind of censorship upon it, I mean, I think you need to consider how comfortable you feel on the board. I'm just talking practically. I mean, if it's 22 to 2 and there's only two people that, you know, and not all 22 people want to do something that you are convinced is, destined for... A negative ruling, and not just a negative ruling, because negative rulings we get all the time, but a ruling that's so negative that the court finds that it was in violation of something that leads to some kind of a sanction or something. You know, is that a place where you want to be?
Can you speak into the microphone, please? We can't hear your
question. She asked, what's your responsibility to the organization? I think your responsibility to the organization is to speak out, to make your position known, to make it clear that you didn't support that. You're not going to have direct liability That shouldn't be a concern. It's a board action. If there's any liability, it's the board's. It's not any of the individual members. And I think you just want to make a record clear, you know, through your voting, through the minutes, through whatever statement you make, that you do not support that position. Then if for any reason, you know, and this is a legal concept I don't think we'd ever get into here, but if for any reason the there becomes what's called alter ego liability, that a court or an opposing party looks beyond the corporate form and goes after the individuals. If you've made clear on the record that you didn't support that position, then the alter ego liability would not get through to you.
Thank you, Mr. Gold. Afia is next.
I'm always concerned that these sessions always tend to focus on what the responsibilities of the board is, as opposed to a more balanced presentation of what the staff's responsibility is as well. And because of the emphasis placed on what the board is supposed to do, despite the fact that every one of these board members have served on this and other boards, tends to have a silencing effect, tends to discourage the full exercise of the oversight responsibilities of the board, and undue reliance on those who are presented as experts. So I would challenge us to not get sucked into that again. We've already been through that a number of times, and that a part of being a board member is being a board member.
Did you have anything you wanted to?
No, I don't think it was a question.
Okay. Thank you. Do I have anyone else who has not yet asked a question? Because I'm about to go to my second round. Okay. Tracy? And then we're past time, but we can finish this up. So go ahead, Tracy.
One question and two brief comments. We were talking a bit about the status of local boards in as part of the structure as opposed to national boards. And I just wanted to sort of, you know, ask a question and put something out, which is that obviously with regard to committees of various kinds, which includes local board committees, this board has at various points tried to make policy regarding when there are issues and differences throughout different parts of the organizations or things aren't working collaboratively. Since we're pretty good at organizational amnesia, I thought it might be good just to throw out that we did, in fact, pass a motion, I think it was about a year and a half ago, maybe a bit less than that, where we talked about what happened when it was the perception of the majority of the Pacifica National Board that a local station board was acting adversely to the interests of the foundation. I think it was called, in popular lingo, recalcitrant LSBs. I could be wrong.
You're right. That's it.
But that is, in fact, an attempt to grapple with that situation. And if we are going to talk about it, I think it makes sense not to forget what we already did. And my question for Andy, which is probably an unfair question, because this is a policymaking board, is it... I would certainly say that the Pacifica National Board has the ability to make policy regarding what to do when the different parts of the foundation are in serious disagreements about what is in the best interest of the foundation. And I guess I would ask for kind of your commentary on that. You may not be familiar with the motion, and you can punt if you want, and I think you're going to based on the expression on your face, but I would ask a question about that.
Yeah, who's the long snapper? That's a football term.
Good question. Me, apparently.
Someone who you know, the person who snaps the ball back
so
far
enough.
So I think
I'm asking you an unfair question about a policy that you haven't seen.
Yeah. That's a little hard. But the one thing I will say is that, you know, you have a unique structure in that you have a national board, but you have local station boards. Mm-hmm. And there is a, you know, there are separations, but there are unities between those entities as well, because everybody here is here mm-hmm. by virtue of being on a local station board.
Okay.
I guess for except for a few, you know, affiliates okay. or you know or other people.
Yeah.
So you know, it's an issue I think that bears some further thought on my part and maybe some other, you know, it's like what is the interaction between the entities.
Yeah, and we set up a lot of moving parts to check and balance on each other, and I understand where that comes from, but it's kind of like a checks and balances nightmare around here. Everything checks and balances. The question is, you know, what you can do. But anyway, two other just...
And I guess, you know, one of the things I'd be curious yeah. to know, and maybe I can do some work on this in the future, yeah. is to know more. I mean, I've... you know, I have the bylaws for the National Board. I've, to a certain extent, become familiar with those and had a lot of questions to try to interpret some things. You know, and I know the local station boards are addressed in there, but it'd be curious. It would be interesting for me to know more about how the local station boards operate, what exactly they do, and what their powers are.
Okay, and two very quick comments. I think it is important to recognize, and I'm a civil liberties kind of person, that the right to appeal is basically a fundamental legal right, and we should be careful about characterizing any exercise of the legal right to appeal as contempt of court. I think that is the kind of thing that echoes on disinformation and misinformation. It is never in contempt of court to ask for a decision to be reconsidered. That's a basic constitutional right. I think the other thing already got said, so that's it.
I've got several other people in front of you, but is there anyone else who has not yet spoken that wishes to ask a question? I am going to second round now. That's it. Okay, first call is gone. Alex?
I want to follow up on a hypothetical, back to law school and all that. Of course, we recognize that such a thing would never happen in an organization like Pacifica, but suppose there was a concerted political effort to remove someone from the board, and this resulted in a recall campaign. This, of course, is not a...
Purely hypothetical.
Purely hypothetical. Yeah. You said earlier that it's impossible to prove motivation in such a case, whether the motivation was political or what. Suppose there was some very solid evidence that the motivation was, in fact, political. Behind such a campaign, that the alleged breach of conduct that triggers off the recall campaign was simply a pretext for some purely political reasons. If you could produce that evidence, would that then constitute a breach of fiduciary responsibility on the part of those carrying out the recall campaign? And the second part of that, what kind of evidence do you think would be needed to meet that standard? I realize it's a little bit unfair,
yeah,
but anyway, it's back in law school stuff.
Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, the short answer is, if you had all that evidence, one could argue that that's a breach of a duty of loyalty, that it's a divided loyalty, that instead of being loyal to the organization, it's being loyal to a faction that's engaged in an act of civil war as opposed to things that are advancing the foundation. Honestly, in terms of what kind of evidence you would have for that, I mean, you know, if you get into lawsuits, you take discovery, sometimes you find out things that people have done for reasons. But it's honestly, I'd rather not get into.
Yeah, folks, I really do have to please ask that we stop treading on things that we're going to be discussing, like in a few minutes in closed session. We're past due schedule on this. I have Campbell, Ken, and Lydia who wanted second rounds, and Ivan. No, you do not want a second round, Ivan?
If we pass due and some of these things are going to be discussed again, can we just move to the next?
Well, I'm asking people graciously to consider the fact that we are going to tread over this same territory shortly, and this is the portion over general board responsibility. So if you have a question, go ahead and ask it right now, and that's fine. And then, but I like to finish the stack when people have already raised their hands. That's why I was announcing what the stack was before more people add themselves to it. So,
what I was going to say, as chair, can you take the leadership in, once you see redundancy, to move forward?
That's what I was doing.
Okay.
Campbell, and then Ken, and then Lydia, and then we're done here, and we will thank the public, and we'll go into executive session. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And somewhat related to a point that our esteemed Director Alsame was mentioning insofar as looking at the connection between personal liability and the exercise of fiduciary responsibility. I was wondering, Mr. Gold, what is your view of how this would be interpreted as it may relate to the continued pursuit of appeals of an adverse foundation decision that are, where these appeals are contrary to the advice of counsel, and also, of course, where it's contrary to rather well-established judicial principles in the case below.
You know, is that something you want to talk about here, or is that a closed session?
Yeah, why don't we discuss? I do again appeal to board members that if it is about a pending matter about which we are going to discuss in about 15 minutes.
No, this is hypothetical.
I enjoy hypothetical.
Or you could say it's a prior issue that had been engaged.
General counsel, if you feel like engaging in law school fun, go ahead and answer the hypothetical. But
it should be settled.
I'm not sure which case you're talking about.
Let's not get into which case we're talking about.
It's one that the legal determination would be that it was settled. Of course, people can drag things through to the Supreme Court, I guess, but is this the kind of thing that would be wise?
Okay, folks. Let us try not to have... thank you. It's all right. That was good, Kelly. Ken and Lydia, you're passing? Lydia?
Yes, and I would only recommend that the issue of recalcitrant LSBs in principle was was dealt with as a result of our suits in 1999 and 2000. So you might want to revisit those because it was the same issue brought to bear at that time.
Thank you. So, folks, I think we've, if not exhausted the public, we've exhausted the time. Members of the public, we're about half an hour. Yes, Kent?
A point of personal privilege. I'd like to introduce John Gary, recording secretary.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Kent, and I apologize, John. I introduced him to several people individually, but not to the board officially, to thank him for, and yes, thank you for being with us physically today. So, LaVarne Williams, yes, please go ahead.
I join in that introduction, and more importantly, an expression of appreciation for the services that he has rendered to this board.
Hear, hear. Thank you, John, for all your help to us. And yes. Yes, patience and assistance. And thank you, LaVarne Williams, did join us for the record. Quite a while ago. All right. So, members of the public, we're going into executive session at this time. We will be coming back into public session. We're scheduled at, I'm sorry?
Noon.
No, 1 o'clock. Lunch is at noon, Teresa. Anyway.
Not on the agenda.
We changed it yesterday, and I reiterated on the stream. Yes, I will reiterate it again. I was being in conformity with what we agreed to yesterday in case people had actually scheduled themselves yesterday, which is we'll be back in open session at 1 p.m. We're going to be in closed session until noon. We've got lunch between noon and 1, and then we'll be back in open session at 1 o'clock. So please, members of the public, please rejoin us at 1 p.m., and we will have public comment between 3:30 and 4 p.m. for those that wish to make public comment. That is a time certain on public comment. Public comment is, I try to always make it a time certain so people can actually know when to be here if they want to address us. So thank you very much for being with us this morning, and we look forward to seeing you this afternoon.